This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. Co-host TJ Inman will be along with us shortly. And we'll talk about Indiana's thrilling 44-41 double overtime win at West Lafayette to bring the bucket back to Bloomington. But first, a word from our sponsors over at MyBookie. As a true football fan, you already know just as sure as the seasons change, Tom Brady will keep the Patriots in the game. Every weekend, our favorite gridiron warriors put their skills to the test. So why aren't you doing the same? We're over halfway through the NFL season, so now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in the game at MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all of your favorite pro and college football action. Every weekend, they always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bet of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with MyBookie. If you bet now, if you go to MyBookie now, the best part is if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put $1,000 in, they'll give you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit. You can use on all your favorite picks. Use promo code CHAIR, C-H-A-I-R, to activate this offer. That's promo code CHAIR to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right. Well, what an exciting weekend it was. I hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. And we have TJ Inman joining us here shortly. Great rivalry week around college football. The coaching carousel is heating up as well. We saw great games in the Big Ten, a few upsets, a few nail biters, and a few blowouts. So we'll talk about all that, where IU might go bowling, and much, much more. So bucket week ended victoriously for Indiana. They ended up winning in double overtime 44-41. It was a game that featured a torrential downpour in the first half, some bitter cold in the second half, and some just vicious crosswinds that affected the kicking game in for each side. So, you know, to me, the game is – the game was it was a rivalry game. It's going to come down to, you know, who's playing the best, and you know, everybody knew Purdue was going to give their best shot as well. And if you thought going up to West Lafayette to win was going to be easy, especially against this team with Jeff Brohm as coach, David Bell, and Bryson Hopkins. Even with Aiden O'Connell at quarterback, the kid has a strong arm, can chuck the ball. It was just a difficult day for Indiana, and it started out well. Indiana was up 14-0. There were a few plays, and we'll talk about this in a second. There were a few plays that went against the Hoosiers and kind of turned the game. TJ, welcome into the show. Has your heart rate come down from Saturday yet?
Yeah, it took a while, but by the time I went to bed on Saturday around 10:30, 11 o'clock, whenever it was, I was feeling more of a normal self, but it took a while for sure. That was an intense game, high stakes, you know, for both sides. We say these things before games. We say, oh, throw out the records, they don't matter. We say those things. It's not true, of course, but in a rivalry game like that, Indiana and Purdue, you know, it really almost doesn't matter what else has happened that season, at least in that moment. You kind of tend to forget about those things in that moment, and it's just all about beating that other team. And it was just such a roller coaster of a contest, highs, lows, and then just an ultimate feeling of elation as Indiana found a way to come out on top in double overtime.
Yeah, it was, you know, as you said, especially in the second half, is punch, counter punch. And, you know, the first half was Indiana 121-10, second half Purdue 121-10, and then it was 13-10 in overtime, in two overtimes there. You know, this rivalry, you know, it's starting to heat up on and off the field. You've now had, Indiana had their run of four where they were clearly better than Purdue. You know, then Purdue came back and won two, and now Indiana strikes back on the road and gets one. And you kind of saw it with Tywin Mullen and David Bell going at each other. And, yeah, David Bell had a huge day. Tywin Mullen played as well as he possibly could on David Bell. But I think this rivalry is starting to heat up, and you might have another 2, 3, 4 years where this rivalry is going to be really good. And it's great for college football in the state of Indiana. I think it's great for both fan bases. And credit to the IU fans who traveled up to West Lafayette, sat in the freezing cold rain and the wind, and credit to the Purdue fans. They had, I think they had 55,000 at the game, actually, was the announced attendance. It was very close to that, the actual people in the stands, when it was at its fullest. Now, people didn't want to sit in the rain and left, but it was a good crowd. They were into it, and it was just – I would say it would be different if IU lost, but that was a fun football game to watch. It had a little bit of everything. It had defensive plays. It had a lot of offense. It had, you know, special teams miscues. It had a little bit of chippiness as well. So going back to the start of the game, TJ, Indiana got out to a 14-0 lead. Purdue, I thought them kicking that field goal to make it 14-3 was kind of – like, hey, we just need points on the board, but you get down there, you might need a touchdown. You know, Raheem Lane had just dropped the pick. It would have been a tough play, but, you know, that's a ball you got to come down with and settling for three. And then, you know, Purdue's offense, that might have sparked Purdue's offense. Bryson Hopkins came alive the next drive with 72-yard catch and run, where, you know, he just had inside leverage on Cam Jones and beat him to the end zone, and that's the reason I voted for Bryson Hopkins on my All-America ballot, was because he's had two straight performances like that, and that's what he could do, and he's done it a lot, and that's why I put him up there. What was your moment that kind of told you that, hey, this game, you know, at 14-0, hey, this game is going to be a little bit closer than that?
Well, there were a couple of instances when it seemed like Indiana was kind of lining up a knockout punch, if you will, and they either failed to make a play or Purdue made a play to stave that off. I think we all kind of felt this way, but we, you know, texted in our group text, we kind of exchanged, you know, hey, look, this, you know, this is going to be close at some point here. It did not. It felt early like a game that Indiana could run away with, but once IU missed a couple of chances, and you mentioned Raheem Lane failing to make that interception, which credit to Jamar Johnson, because on a similar play he did, he made an interception in the end zone on Purdue's opening drive, and I thought Jamar made another, you know, good play to show his ability for the future. But once Indiana failed to make those couple of plays to really put distance between themselves and Purdue, it felt like a game that was going to be tight. And for me, the moment that I think really woke Purdue up, if you will, and let them know, hey, we're in this thing, I think it was that Bryson Hopkins play. Prior to that, they'd sort of moved the ball, but they had not really broken through for anything other than that field goal. The Bryson Hopkins play, I think, showed them and their offense behind O'Connell that, you know, look, we can do this. Another play that really stood out to me is showing it was going to be a close game was Xander Horvath's first run that he broke through, you know, busted through a tackle or two and had a nice long run, which is something Purdue hadn't had all season. I think that gave them a lot of confidence that, you know, Saturday was going to be different for them than what they'd experienced so far that year. It feels odd to have any complaints after finishing off an 8-4 regular season and winning the bucket in thrilling fashion. So I don't want to be negative in any sense here on this podcast, but it was a disappointing performance from the defense. I don't think we can sugarcoat that or want to sugarcoat that in any way. We are, you know, we're fans of the program, but we're also going to be critical where it's deserved. And I thought the defense had a really rough day against Purdue. Jeff Brohm's a very good offensive coach. They've got really good weapons, including Hopkins and Bell, who are just a really good 1-2 punch. And, you know, they're going to make plays. I completely understand that. But I thought that Marcelino Ball struggled again and thought he really had a poor day, capping off what was not a great year for him by any stretch. And I thought the tackling against Xander Horvath was really bad, really, really bad. And then you mentioned David Bell made a lot of plays. Again, I agree with you. Taiwan Mullen played very well against him. So I don't fault Taiwan Mullen for that or the secondary. I think David Bell is going to do that to people. He's every bit as good as advertised, possibly better than advertised. We knew he was going to be a really good player, and he is. I was more disappointed with just the lack of ability to make any adjustments against Bryson Hopkins, who, very good tight end. I completely understand that. However, I don't think Indiana made any adjustments that made a difference against him, and that was disappointing to see. So, rough day for the defense, one that, I hope they can learn from, but they got shredded pretty badly by Purdue's offense. Thankfully, IU's offense was able to do just as much and make, you know, one key play. And we can talk about the standouts from offense here in a minute, but, I'll start with Peyton Ramsey. We've said it before during the season. He has improved so much. I know he made mistakes with reads in the second half. I know he missed A-Rod Lloyd twice for wide open kind of wheel route touchdowns that he just didn't look at him, just flat out missed the read.
There was nobody over on that half the half.
No,
field.
There was not. Yeah, and that's, you know, you can't do that. But the toughness and leadership and just improvement in Peyton Ramsey's game, I don't think can be overstated how much better he got over the offseason and the course of this season to help lead Indiana to 8 wins. He made a number of key scrambles for Indiana and just a few absolutely clutch plays that IU had to have, and Ramsey made them. I thought that he, you know, deserves a lot of credit for that. And then Samson James was really the first extended time we've seen him before he was injured, and he looked phenomenal. You have to be excited for his future as a running back in Indiana because he looked really great.
Yeah, and I wanted to circle back to the defense real quick, TJ. It was a boom or bust, you know, day for the defense. They got the two takeaways and the pick and the fumble. They also stopped Purdue 3 times on 4th down, which is huge. So if you put those together, they had 5 sudden changes from defense to offense. It's to me, this game pointed out what IU's lacking on defense. And I don't think it necessarily was adjustments. It's, you don't have an athlete who could run with Bryson Hopkins or is fast enough to cover him. You know, Micah Mathafson has had a tremendous year, but he slipped and fell on the touchdown in overtime. They were down. There was one where they had 10 players on the field, and Cam Jones is trying to cover two people down at the goal line, and Hopkins got it again, I think, in the second quarter or in the third quarter with Xander Horvath taking it in the next play. It's like that play is unacceptable. You know, either Cam Jones, he was screaming towards the sideline, hey, 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 we only have 10. He needs to take a timeout. But it shows you what IU is lacking. They're lacking a pass rush defensive lineman who's going to be a step or two faster than IU was, and IU's got flagged, I think, two or three times for roughing the passer, and some of them were, you know, a little touchy-feely, and some of them were warranted, but, you know, it just shows you what they're missing. I think the big key this year in the defense not improving as much as we thought it would was the play of Marcelino Ball. I mean, he was a straight liability on this defense, and I don't know what's up with him. He's kind of seemed distant from the team. He's, you know, retweeted a whole bunch of stuff on Twitter with media members calling him out and things like that. And he's had his bright spots. But, you know, he was the first one out of the locker room while guys were in there celebrating. So I don't know what was going on there. You know, it might be a private issue. It could be something else. But I thought he was the key to the defense at Husky. He looked slow at times. He was out of place, and it just seemed like every time an opponent made a big play, it was Marcelino Ball on the other side. And then you go to the running game, and Xander Horvath is every bit of 6'3", 240. So I understand breaking some tackles, but the guy ran for 200 yards for the season. And I said on our preview podcast with Matt Weaver that he can't let Purdue, who has run the ball for under 100 yards per game all year, you can't let them have the day that they had in 2017 where all of a sudden Markell Jones runs for 217 yards after running for like 208 for the entire season. And that's what they did with Horvath, even though, I mean, he looked like Mike Allscott out there. And it was, he had a really good day. But that's what happens in a rivalry game. But some bright spots on defense, Tywan Mullen. I thought Reese Taylor had an excellent game as well. He came up and made some big tackles. He had the big fourth down pass breakup that if I think it was Wright had it. If he makes that play, Purdue's kicking a field goal to win the game of regulation. And it wasn't a very far field goal, and Dellinger is a good kicker. And that was the end that Logan Justice struggled with both sides of the field, and we'll get to that as well. But I thought you began to see, you know, who's going to play on this defense. Now, IU has a lot of work to do on the recruiting trail. You have to get somebody who can rush the passer, somebody who could clog the middle. You need to get some more athletic linebackers out there. And honestly, you probably need somebody to come play Husky, because Brian Fitzgerald, whatever happened to him last year, he has been mostly invisible this year. So maybe it's signaling coming in too late and things like that, and it's, you just need to let these guys play defense. But something has to change. There are people who are calling for Womack's head, and I don't think that is right. I don't think Womack's going anywhere. I think they just need to kind of simplify the defense a little bit, to where we're not looking to the sideline every time Purdue adjusts, and you know, just go and let your athletes play, because they are better athletes than they let on the entire year, where they looked a step or two slow.
Yeah, I think a couple things that we could see happen for next year. I would not be surprised at all to see Cade Womack up in the booth, signaling in play or calling in plays. That would not surprise me at all if that happened.
Yep.
And then have Tom Allen, you know, down on the field as kind of the guy that would be in your position, coach, obviously doing the face-to-face talking on the field, if you will. That would not surprise me at all if that adjustment is made. The second thing, I do think that we've seen enough from Tywan Mullen, of course, and I think his emergence as a, not a future star, a present star on that Indiana defense, he is by far IU's best corner. It's not even remotely close. Indiana needs a second guy to step up. And I think Reese Taylor has shown flashes of that. If I were making a prediction now, which would be ridiculous, but if I were for that second starting corner next year, I think Reese Taylor would be that prediction. And then as far as Husky goes, you're right. They need an answer there for next season. I've been encouraged. I mentioned him. I've been encouraged by Jamar Johnson's play. I wonder if he could be a guy that you slot into that position, particularly against pass-heavy teams that Indiana would play. Possibly not big enough to handle that position against run-heavy teams, but I think Jamar Johnson has earned increased playing time, and maybe that comes at Husky. But you're right, that's a spot that Indiana can certainly sell available playing time to.
Yeah, and then going to offense, TJ, it was going to be – I thought it was going to be a tough sledding game for Indiana. You were without Stevie Scott. You were without Matthew Bedford, and you had Devondre Love slide in there. And he got beat a couple times by George Karloftis, and you'd think with Bedford in there it would have been a little bit better. But there was a time, I think, in the second, third quarter Purdue just, I mean, they sent the house and just moving Indiana backwards. And that just changed the game as well. But offensively, Samson James looks like the real deal. And that's the running I kind of expected. And that's what I expected him to play a lot more this year. He played in all 12 games. But I thought that they would, kind of give Stevie, cut his carries in half and let those two do the bulk of the work to try and keep each other healthy. Now that hasn't happened, but the rumor out of camp was that Samson James was right there with Stevie Scott for the starting running back position. And to me, he looks like a better running back than Stevie Scott, which is, it's not a knock on Stevie. He came in, he's played well. They're just kind of a, Samson James is a four-star running back that Ohio State wanted for a reason, and he played very well. He could run people over. He's fast enough to run by people over, and he has all those technical skills that Stevie still is developing. But outside of that, I thought Peyton Ramsey, he played very, very well at times, and then there were times where he went back to last year's, one look reads. He missed a couple guys in the third quarter down who were wide open down the middle of the field to throw the ball outside. Irod Lloyd in the fourth quarter was wide. Purdue didn't even cover him. And watching it from the radio booth, you're looking at Don Fisher and Buck Sir going, there's nobody out there. And, that's something you got to see and throw it out there. It wasn't like they were baiting him into throwing it there. There was literally not anybody lined up within 20 yards of Irod Lloyd on a streak play. And then on a little swing pass, nobody covered him either. So those are the little things. But he's played really, really well this year, and it's hard to just pick and choose spots. And his run for first down, I think it was third and 21 or something, that kind of looked like the John Elway helicopter run. you know, that and the run against Maryland, that's what Peyton Ramsey is all about. He's going to get that extra 6 inches that his team needs to win. And the guy's a gamer, and you could say what, you know, I've said it. You know, he doesn't have the arm strength that a lot of quarterbacks have, but he has more heart than anybody else. And his heart and his will to win carried IU to 8 wins this year. And so big shout out to them. The offensive line we talked about a little bit. We'll see what they do next year because they lose. You lose Love, Stepniak, Little John. Now you have you might have Kronk coming back. You have Bedford coming back. You have Kreider coming back. Some young guys who could fill in there, and maybe a grad transfer. But
Caleb Jones,
you know, the offensive line. Yeah, and Caleb Jones, of course. But the offensive line at times looked a little leaky. But thought the receivers played well. This is probably Nick Westbrook's best game of the year. Ty Freifogel kind of dropped that touchdown, although the defensive back made a great play. And the WAP failure changes the game for Indiana. You know, Purdue kind of lost him in the shuffle on the one long touchdown pass, but he changes that entire offense. You have to account for him. And then I don't know what happened to Donovan Hale. I didn't find out he was out until, you know, listening to Don on the pregame show. But ESPN said he had surgery last week. We'll try and find out what that was about and things like that. But, you know, it was two banged-up teams going against each other, and they don't like each other. And it just turned into a good game. Now, special teams, TJ, I don't know what it looked like on TV.
One quick note for me on the offensive line. Certainly some departures coming up. However, if you want to be an optimist, which why not? I mean, I use 8-4. Why not be optimistic? If you want to, you can definitely paint the picture of a better offensive line next season. You'd have Matthew Bedford returning with experience, and this is a lot of ifs, but if Croy Conn comes back, slides inside the guard, if the grad transfer from Stanford, Dylan Powell, joins up, you could be looking at an offensive line that lines up as, you know, a really strong one, not just for Indiana, but in terms of where they stand in the Big Ten. With Bedford and Jones at your tackles, Powell either at guard or center, Kronk at guard, Kreider coming back, some young guys like Michael Kadip, Jaden Rafferty that they're excited about, McKenzie Nora possibly returning as well. So it could be a really good group if those things happen. But still, you know, I thought their performance on Saturday was honestly as shuffled up as it's been. I think you'd overall have to be pretty positive about their performance, particularly when Samson James is in the game. Their performance as a line run blocking for Samson James, I thought they were really good during that early stretch of the game when IU was establishing the run, really moving the pile consistently. I thought that was a pretty good performance by them early on. They struggled with pass protection some as the game wore on, but overall, I think you'd have to take a pretty positive outlook from what they brought you, given the restructuring they've had to do.
Oh, definitely. And this team is – this program's kind of a year ahead of schedule. Is, you know, preseason predictions, you know, we said that the ceiling was probably 8 wins if you win all your matchup games, which they did. But that next year was the big year when these – you know, sophomores and juniors become juniors and seniors, and the experienced freshmen become redshirt sophomores and sophomores, and you have a more veteran team. And the future looks bright for IU, and we'll see what they do on signing day coming up here in a couple weeks. But let's talk about special teams, TJ. It was not great day for Logan Justice. I would love to blame it on the crosswind. I really would. But after going back and watching the game, I don't think the wind was much of a factor. I think he just – maybe it was a factor in his head, but he missed the two kicks on the open end of the stadium, which I believe is the south end, by a lot. And then he kind of overcompensated on the field goal on the north end in the fourth quarter before they switched to Charles Campbell, who, holy cow, talk about the cojones on that kid to come in and ice cold and nail two, not one, but two field goals. Only one counted, but, you know, they took a delay of game. He had hit the first one, took a delay of game, moved it back to about a 41-yard field goal, and he nailed it. So he was rated as a five-star kicker for a reason. And my biggest thing with Logan Justice was his body language after the missed kicks. It looked like he looked very dejected. He had looked like he had no confidence in himself. He wasn't cheering on Campbell. I think at one point Gavin Everett came over to him, and he kind of shrugged him off as well. And I was actually kind of surprised that Tom Allen put him back out there for the extra point. You know, the way he was acting on the sideline, I thought mentally he had been, you know, he is shot, kind of like the 1 year, 2016, when Griffin Oaks was up at Michigan State and, you know, and was having a conniption fit up there after missing kicks. But it was a tough day to kick. The footing on the field is bad. The wind, you know, whether it played a factor physically or mentally, it played a factor. But if IU makes two or even all three of those field goals, we're not even talking about double overtime. You know, IU probably wins going away. You're up 24-10 at halftime. You're up by a couple touchdowns late in the second half. And those missed field goals, they were killer. And you got to maybe think going forward that Charles Campbell might have to be your guy. As good as Logan Justice has been this year, those are pressure kicks. And he just shanked them. And we'll see. But it was good to see Hayden Whitehead bounce back. He had a good day. He just missed putting one out inside the one-yard line. It just crossed over the pylon. It was a phenomenal kick. And then late in the fourth, when David Ellis had a great return. I thought maybe he had a chance of breaking it if the weather was, you know, the field was a little bit less wet, but he set him up with good field position. IU couldn't take advantage of that, and Hayden Whitehead pinned Purdue down inside the two, you know, on Purdue's final drive. So outside of Logan Justice, you know, the IU special teams played all right, but I don't know. You might have a kicking controversy in the bowl game. It's something that you have to figure out over these 15 practices. Campbell is redshirted already, so you have no eligibility issues there with using games, and it might be good to have him kick and get ready for next year. You know, he looks like he has a big leg, and he was rated five stars for a reason. So what was your take on special teams?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly touched on it there. Interesting decision to bring on Campbell. I think it was the right one. I feel like it's one you had to make. You could not take a chance that, you know, with Campbell, you didn't know what was going to happen. It did not feel like there was any chance Logan Justice was going to make a kick if you sent it back out there for another field goal. So credit to Campbell for coming out there and make it not one, but two. You know, it didn't end up costing IU the game, which is the best we can say about the field goals that day. That would have been certainly something you would look back on with great regret if, you know, field goals had cost in the end of the bucket. But it's not the case. They got the win. And like you said, I do think it is certainly something that's going to be worth watching is over the next few weeks of practice, how Indiana prepares for the bowl game and who they go out with. the kicker and how that kicker responds to whatever the decision is. And the only response that really matters, honestly, is do you make the kicks or not when you're in the game? So we'll see how that plays out. I think it will be interesting to watch, and I think it will be a point that the coaches are going to be looking at for sure.
Yeah, it's just something you can't have. And you know, it's been the kind of year where maybe in years past, IU coughs up that game because of those three missed field goals. It's 9 points left on the field at least. We discussed about Indiana going for it on that the third one he missed. It was 4th and 2, maybe 4th and a long 2. I asked Allen about it after the game. He said he just didn't like the setup, that even though Logan had missed the first 2, he had faith in him to go kick the 3rd one, and then obviously he pulled him after that. So I would have liked to see him go for it, but hindsight's 20/20. You know, if you don't get it, you don't get it, and it's the same as a missed field goal.
Yeah.
But IU just
lost Samson James to injury a little bit before that. So, it was the running game had certainly tailed off without Samson. So, maybe you didn't feel good about any of your short yardage plays without him in there. I think that probably factored into it as well. But, I texted in live time. You guys wanted to go for it. I texted him live time that I didn't know. That was a tough call. That was one of those that I didn't think there was an obvious choice on that. So that was a tough one.
No, either way.
Hindsight's 20/20 on that one. But when you miss the field goal, it certainly doesn't look like a great decision, regardless of, if you do hit the field goal, it feels a little bit better. But that's one you'd expect to hit for sure. That was not a difficult kick.
Yeah, and it was – there was no wrong answer other than that they didn't execute. If you kick a field goal, you go up by 14 points. If you go for it and end up scoring a touchdown, you go up 18. If you go for it, make it, end up kicking field goal, you're up 2 touchdowns, and you take off more time on the clock. So, you're fine with any of the choices. They just needed to execute, and Logan Justice didn't. Moving on, TJ, Indiana's 8-4. Bowl selection Sunday is next week. Where do you see the Hoosiers landing?
Well, I'm not going to pretend like I, talk to bowl executives or anything like that, but the chatter that has been passed on is the most likely possibility is the Music City Bowl in Nashville. That appears to be IU officials will be thrilled with it. The Music City Bowl officials apparently would be very enthusiastic about that as well. I don't know what matchup they have in mind, but one that I'd love to see would be Kentucky. Have Indiana and Kentucky battling in Nashville, Tennessee. And the Music City Bowl, I think, would be a really, really cool and fitting end to this season. And I think it'd be a game that really did matter to both teams, especially Indiana. Any bowl game IU goes to is going to be very important for this program. It's not going to be one that you're going to question their motivation there. But I think that's – I'd put that as the most likely. The second one that I would put – would be the Gator Bowl. And I still am not 100% sure how the contract between Indiana or the Big Ten, I should say, the Music City Bowl and the Gator Bowl works out, but apparently it's the last year of the deal and it doesn't really matter. So they'll figure out what works best for all parties, and if everybody can be agreeable on it, that's what they'll do, which makes sense. The bowl games are about making money, and however you can maximize your profit, go for it. I think the third option that I honestly don't really see as realistic, but it's still out there, is the Outback Bowl. I think quite a few things would have to happen for that to fall to Indiana. I think that there's a couple other teams in line ahead of the Hoosiers. I think Minnesota ends up going to the Outback Bowl. It's a bowl that they have not been to for a while, and I think that that probably ends up falling to them at 10-2. You know, I don't think that they get into one of those New Year's Six bowls. I do think it's very possible the Big Ten gets a third team into the New Year's Six, depending on, you know, how a few other things shake out. If that's the case, then you've got, you know, I just see Minnesota behind Wisconsin now in the pecking order, so I think they're fourth. You know, you can say they should be ahead of Penn State. That's fair, but I don't think that they will be. I think the selection committee will have Penn State ranked higher than the Gophers, which means the Gophers are going to be fourth in the pecking order, and the Outback Bowl would be getting a new team. So I think they end up there, but that's one that's there. I'd be very surprised if it's anything other than the Music City or the Gator Bowl.
Yeah, I've seen them all over the place, including still the Red Box Bowl, Pinstripe Bowl, and all those things. I
don't think Indiana's going out west. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think they want to avoid that, especially, you know, with the 8-win Indiana team and these, you know, either the Music City or these Florida Bowls not having. And Indiana's never played a bowl game in Florida. So, you know, these games want – and Florida has a huge a huge alumni base down there, and it would be pretty easy travel for a lot of people to show up. So, I mean, we'll see. It's going to be wait and see. Hopefully the bowl show isn't as tedious – as it has been in the past, where it takes them 18 million hours to get through it on an NFL Sunday. And it just happens that IU is always announced like second to last. And it's just a brutal, you know, brutal show. So hopefully it goes quicker this year. I believe it's on ESPN or ESPN2. We'll have it covered for everybody out there, but what a season this was, TJ. 8-4, 5-4 in the Big Ten. A lot of, you know, two shutout wins, a huge win over Northwestern, the nail biter at Nebraska, bucket win. What are your final thoughts on the regular season?
It's one that I will not forget, and I say that as somebody with three kids that forgets basically everything. I'm not going to forget this. It's been an absolute blast to cover this particular team and this particular season. We're not done yet. You know, we've still got a whole lot of stuff that we've got in mind for bowl, for the bowl preparations. And, you know, I know that Indiana's going to go to whatever bowl game they go to with full intention of winning it and matching the school record of wins for the season and fulfilling that 9-win prophecy for 9-win Indiana. On the that we, you know, I think was initially kind of mockingly made, if you will, that that slogan or that suggestion by most was kind of a, oh yeah, like, you know, okay, when hell freezes over. Well, you know, it very well could come true, and I think Indiana's going to go to whatever bowl game with full intention of making that happen. We entered the season just having a baseline expectation of 6 wins, you know, get to a bowl game and keep building the program momentum. That was my hope for the season, to be 100% honest. I thought that Indiana could. I thought they were talented enough to do so, but I wasn't sure about it by any means. And for IU to get to 8 wins and have a shot at a really nice bowl game and hopefully get that win and get to 9, that's really cool, really exciting, and I'm just really excited to continue to cover the future of this program because I think it is very bright.
Yeah, you know, this season to me, it was, you know, people will discount who IU played within the non-conference, and that's their prerogative. To me, this is what happens when you schedule smartly and you win your matchup games. It is 8 wins. And they cruised through, for the most part, they cruised through the non-conference schedule. They cruised through Rutgers, which we said the floor was four. You win a matchup game that at Maryland. You win the matchup game at Nebraska, which I might even be at the beginning of the season that you had that as probably a loss. Maybe you could beat them. Then you come home, you destroy Northwestern in another matchup game, and we'll see. Northwestern's not a 2-10 team. They're not, or whatever, 3-9 team, whatever they finish the season at, a one-win Big Ten team. They're not. They're much better than that. They just fired their offensive coordinator. I don't think they used their talent to the max of its ability. They're on their fourth-string quarterback. And, you know, I think Pat Fitzgerald is much too good of a coach. That's not a three-win or two-win Northwestern program, at least not for the near future. It's a team that went to the Big Ten title game last year. And then, you know, you got the results you probably expected against the Big Four. Now, do you want the Michigan State and the Penn State game back? Sure. Yeah, those were games that IU had a shot to win. They didn't. But, you know, they this is what happens when you schedule smartly and win the matchup games. You can afford to – you're going to lose those games most likely. You haven't beaten Ohio State or Michigan since the 80s. You've beaten Penn State once. We'll see what Michigan State does, and it kind of stinks that Michigan State fell off the earth after the IU win, their win over IU. But it's, you know, that's a tough road game. Penn State was a tough road game. And we're at the point of this program where, yeah, people are allowed to be mad that they lost those games that they could have won. And that's a good thing. It's, they're over the moral victories, and there are no moral victories this year. You have eight real victories to talk about. And, you know, with a chance to go for nine, I thought it was a season where Indiana dealt with injuries. The two guys you thought that couldn't get hurt got hurt in Coy Cronk and Michael Penix. You lost Juan Harris, who I think changes this. I think he changes this defense a little bit. He leaves the program mid-year. You know, Thomas Allen goes down against Nebraska for the year. He played a lot. He gave a lot of reps at linebacker. Wop Fillier misses games. Stevie Scott missed the bucket game. You know, there were a lot of injuries that Cam Jones misses time. You had Monster Matthews had a club on his hand for the Penn State game. He just had a lot of things that in the past would have held IU back. Maybe they did, but look, they went 8-4 without Coy Cronk, who was arguably their best player coming into the season. Michael Penix played in six games, I believe, or seven games, and only finished like two of them. Yeah. And Wop Fillier missed a time with a concussion, and it totally changes the offense. So if you look on that, it was a great Indiana season, and it was a lot of fun. And I think people are starting to realize that. And yep. You see less and less of these, oh, Tom Allen's just a high school coach. I believe those people now are worried that he's leaving for Florida State, but maybe it's different people. But yeah. To that point, it's, you know, you're starting to change the culture of the fan base. And to me, there are 25 to 30,000 diehard IU football fans that show up every single week. Now it's time to get those students. That freshman class that came in this year, you just had an eight-win season to get to a bowl game. Now you got to win that bowl game and follow it up next year and start creating a culture to where students go to games, students appreciate college football, and guess what? They come back as alumni and buy seats on the other side of the stadium. So, awesome season from Indiana. Are there missed opportunities? Sure. But when it comes down to it, it was a fun year. You got a win at Nebraska. You got 8 wins. You had a thriller in the bucket game. It's just a tremendous year for IU. And we'll see what happens to Tom Allen's contract, if they extend him, if they give him a raise. If they give him a raise, he well deserves it. I think he has 3 or 4 more years left on his contract. So, you know, an extension is not necessarily the big thing, but, you know, pay him, pay your assistant coaches, and go out and recruit and develop. And these 15 bowl practices are going to go a long way to help this young team forward. But anyway, TJ, with that does it for our show. I want to thank you for coming on. Any final words?
No, absolutely not. It's looking forward to seeing where the bowl destination is, and then we'll start analyzing that. So thanks, everybody, and hope you have a good week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, that does it for the Hoosier Huddle podcast, the final one of the regular season. We'll be back next week to talk about Indiana's bowl matchup. Bowl Selection Sunday starts at noon on ESPN and ESPN2. On Sunday, on December 8th, after the championship games, we're excited to see where we'll be going to watch IU play in the postseason. We want to thank everybody who's joined us from on the podcast this year, listening as guests. It's been a tremendous year, and we want to thank our readers, the fans. It's been awesome to go through this season with you guys, and hopefully you're with us down the road in the future as well. So thank you guys. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. You can find us on the internet as well at HoosierHuddle.com, and Armchair Sports is our podcast outlet. Thank you to them for setting us up with a good deal. You can get us on iTunes as well. So thank you. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And we'll be back next Monday to talk postseason destination.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? or the friends you find along the way. Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day.
So what makes a life a good one?
In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting, but Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.